Yes? You don't touch the mic. Just leave the mic. So who's this wee guy?
Wolf.
Wolf? Yeah, Wolf has got a job. You told me he was busy working. What's he busy working at?
Podcast.
This little Wolfie's got a podcast? Yes?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So what? Who's he podcasting to?
Other toys.
Other toys? What's he talking about?
About the bad toy soft government is.
Soft toy government is bad?
Yeah.
Why is it bad?
It just is.
Oh my goodness, even the soft toy government's bad. This is just awful. Right, okay, well, I should publicise this and tell everybody about Little Wolfie's podcast.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, hopefully after this recording, a lot of people will listen to him, okay?
Okay.
Does he talk about anything else?
Nah.
Just that?
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll give him some tips. I'll give him some other ideas. What did you want to talk about? You wanted to talk about chickens, didn't you?
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
How they get broody.
Broody? How do they get broody?
It's because if they see us, take their eggs, they think they're trying to make, they think they're going to have a baby, and they think we're going to try and make it not hatch.
Oh, so they want to stay with their egg and try and make a baby come out?
Yeah.
Is it going to happen?
No.
Why not?
Because they're not married.
The chickens aren't married?
Yeah.
Is it important that they're married?
Yeah.
What?
And they'll have a chick.
So they have to be married to have a chick? Oh, like your little chick?
Yeah.
or a little puppy?
Yeah.
One day we'll have a cockerel and then we'll get the chickens married. Is that all right?
Yeah. And one half, we're going to split the guy in half. And one half is going to have chickens with a cockerel. And our half, it's just going to be pure chickens with no cockerel.
Why are we going to do that?
So we know if they have a baby in them or not.
Oh, right. I get it. Because if there's a cockerel and he's married to the chicken, they will have a fertilized egg and a baby in that egg.
Yeah.
And if the hens are on one side and they're not married, those are unfertilized eggs and we can eat them.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, that's a great plan. Let's do it. What else? What else are your plans?
We're going to have a dog.
Are we now?
Yeah.
What kind of dog?
A golden retriever.
What are you going to call it?
Chocolate, because it's going to be brown.
You really want a golden retriever?
Yeah.
You're not sure? Are you sure it's going to be golden or brown?
Brown.
Okay. When do you want to get it?
When we had the farm.
What happens if we can't get a farm?
Then we'll just won't have dogs.
All right, okay. Well, we better work hard.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work hard. Are you working hard?
Yeah.
What are you working hard at?
Finding money.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you looking for money? Where'd you look for money?
Lots of places.
Like?
Like at home.
And have you found any?
Yeah, I found some, but lots of them are my sister's.
Oh.
And also, my big sister.
Yeah?
She put money in the thing, and it puts her money in it, but I never did. So she tricked me over it, but supposed to be having money, but she put it in.
Sorry, I didn't understand. Say that again.
I had a red thing.
You had a red thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
A red envelope. I was supposed to go on my pillow and in the morning just put me money in, but I didn't get any money. And it took ages for me to get money in. Then my sister, my big sister, she put money in it by tricking me in. The money magically appeared, but she put it in there.
Oh, so she gave you some money?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So how were you expecting money to get into this red envelope of yours?
I don't know, because I made it at school.
Oh, man. So maybe the fairy was meant to come and she forgot to put money in it.
Yeah.
We need to complain. Yeah. We need to complain to her, the fairy's boss. Not a good fairy. I want a proper fairy that gives proper money in your envelope, the red envelope.
Yeah. Maybe it did give me money, but I stinkily put a spell on it so it didn't make any noise. Made it go through anything and made it see invisible. Only for fairies to see it. Maybe she put a spell on it like that.
Maybe. How old are you again?
5.
You're 5 years old? How did that happen? Yesterday you were just a baby.
No.
You were?
I weren't.
Am I still able to carry you?
Yeah, but it's quite hard for you, isn't it?
Yeah, how much longer do you think I can carry you? Do you think I can carry you when you're 6? Why?
Because I'm going to be too heavy.
When you're big and I'm really old and frail, will you carry me?
What if I can't?
Well, I think you're going to be big and strong.
Yeah, but what if I can't? You didn't ever know.
Okay. All right. Right, let's wrap up. Is there any advice you want to give to people out there? How to stay fit and healthy?
One thing, though. One never trust the government.
Never trust the government. Taught you well. Anything else? What about food? What's good food?
Meat.
Meat?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've taught you well. Anything else? What about love? Is love important?
Yeah, it is.
Do you have a lot of love in your life?
Yeah.
How much?
Quite a lot.
That's good. Can I give you more love?
Just an explode.
If I give you more love, you'll explode. We better not do that then. All right.
If you give some love away, then you can.
You're going to give some love away?
Yeah, to you guys.
I think you already give us quite a lot of love.
I know.
You already give us quite a lot of love. Oh, baby boy. I love you. You said you're going to have your own little boy when you're a teenager. You're going to get married. Is that right?
No.
All right.
Teenager, I'm going to go on the podcast.
Oh, so when you're a teenager, you're going to go on a podcast.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yes, I am.
Where are you going to be when you grow up?
A podcaster. I'm not going to have a real job. I'm just going to be podcasting.
So this isn't a real job?
Yeah,
it's not really a real job, is it? What is it? What is this? It's just having fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of laughing around. Pretty cool, isn't it? All right. Well, I hope your dream comes true, buddy. Okay, let's wrap up. Should we wrap up?
Yeah.
All right, say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Can we actually give that podcast away?
Yeah. There you go, Hugh. Hugh McCarthy. You're back with your lovely Irish accent. I have to admit, your Irish accent is slightly nicer than Jerry Waters.
I wholly agree. It's a different Irish or a different Irish accent. Which are you saying? But anyway, I like it.
No, I think yours is a proper Irish accent. I think his is a fake Irish accent. His isn't the real deal. I really hope he's listening to this, by the way.
Yeah. I think it's more likely that I'm from the north and he's from the Republic, and our accents are certainly in the eastern coast of Northern Ireland discernibly different, and you're getting a northerner's one.
No, and you're better looking than Jerry as well. You know, he's got that funny ponytail business going on.
Yeah, you're not. Obviously, my camera is off, Ahmed.
No, this is just because I love taking the piss out of Jerry. We ring each other just to insult each other every week. It's a running joke, and we see who can insult each other the most. I think I'm winning. He's also very bad at giving telling jokes and taking the mic. He's actually not very good at anything, to be honest. Lovely Jerry.
Yeah, I'm not.
Right, so what's happening in your world, my friend? What are we going to talk about?
Well, I was under the impression we were talking about either RSE, the sexuality education in schools, perhaps the absence of accountability the continued difficulty that anybody that says anything that the government doesn't agree with, that's not real science. You don't have an opinion. I am involved with others in the whole issue what happened to our children. And getting an answer from them, even an answer. I mean, I think, as you've heard me say before, I thought in an accountable democracy, you could ask a question and expect an answer stroke justification. So I've repeatedly asked about masks, vaccine passports, vaccines, school closures, PCR tests, under the basis that if you're going to lock me up, vaccinate my child or my grandchild, mask me 24/7, close my business, stop me traveling, stop me worshipping, I thought I had a reasonable expectation that you might present a scientific case for that and that you might actually present the evidence that you've carried out any sort of risk assessments. But it appears that the government did not carry out a risk-benefit analysis. So they proceeded along a road that was obviously going to be harmful without measuring the harms. So what are the benefits of what you're doing? And of course, we pretty well know now, even though it's taken a while, we pretty well know that the benefits of what they did were highly disputed. And where I'm sitting is they're not disputed because there were no benefits. Lockdowns didn't work. School closures didn't work. Masks didn't work. PCR tests didn't work. Vaccine passports didn't work. So they're not disputed from where I'm sitting. But if you're the government, they are disputed. And that's the purpose of carrying out a harms-benefit analysis. And it seems they didn't. Or if they did, they didn't release them to the general public and they didn't use them as a policy driver. And in the world, as you know, I'm science qualified. In the world that I lived in, that was the whole purpose of science, was to look at evidence, produce data, draw conclusions, and then move on. And it seemed to me very recently they've been saying, we didn't do that, which I'm incredulous. And of course, my concern, there are two related concerns. One is that they might do it again on the basis, you know, there's no government pronouncement that this didn't work. And secondly, we are not able to hold anyone accountable for the mistakes they made. Instead, we appear to have honoured them. And I'm aghast at that. They appear, this revolving door issue that you are a chief executive here or a politician there, an official there, and it doesn't matter if what you've done is a mess, but just move on to another job. So that was one aspect that I've probably spoken about. And the other was the issue of sexualization of our children through the school curriculum.
Hugh.
But since you're the host, I'll pass back to you.
Yeah, Hugh, just before we get onto that topic, and actually it's quite timely. I was actually meant to be speaking to Anna Luftus, the lawyer, the barrister, who's looking into the whole PHSE here, but she was unwell this week, so she had to cancel and we have to reschedule it. But one of my supporters, Jack Wilkinson, has forwarded me this letter from Cambridgeshire County Council, and it's dated the 29th of January, so literally just a few days ago. Dear parents and guardians, as you may have seen in the news, the West Midlands is currently experiencing a large outbreak of measles with a rapid rise in cases. Really? So how many cases? And what's the big deal, if there is? The UK Health Security Agency has therefore declared a national incident. While the outbreak has not yet spread to Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, we need to be prepared in case this happens. If your child is identified as a close contact of a measles case, and they do not have satisfactory vaccination status, they may be asked to self-isolate for up to 21 days. during which they will not be able to attend school or childcare. Children who are fully vaccinated do not need to be excluded from school or childcare. If a child catches measles, they will probably feel quite poorly and be off school for around 10 days. Vaccination can help keep your child in school. I mean, if that's not medical apartheid, I don't know what is. What's changed? I mean, measles is not something that's lethal or dangerous for the vast majority of healthy young children. You know, this is not a severe disease. And they've made it out like it is, and now they're telling parents that their kid's going to be off school for 3 weeks. If that's not punishment, what is? And they can't even get into childcare, so it'll affect the parents' ability to go to work and earn a living. I mean, what the hell is going on here? Nothing's been learnt, mate.
What has concerned me is the absence of any sort of questioning media, politicians, officials. Can't really contest any of these things. I mean, our chief medical officer admitted to a politician, so this is on record, that the children were kept at home in order to keep the parents at home. Now, he made that statement. It's a public statement. And yet there appears to be no what. So where are our education people's jump? Why aren't they not jumping up and down with outrage? Our children were punished educationally, developmentally, their mental health shredded. And why? To keep the parents at home. Now, the point that you were perhaps making was, and it alludes to this growing power of a medical tyranny whereby somebody has the power to declare some sort of emergency and everybody else has to do. So the whole WHO International Health Regulations Amendments, that whole issue, personally, I'm nearly glad I'm the age I am because it's frightening. It hands massive amount of power to an individual, to an unelected health organisation, which is funded by private financiers of something like 75% of the World Health Organization's budget is allocated. So it comes from a financier who's saying, I want you to do this.
Yeah.
We are festooned with adverts on the TV about clean water. And you pay $3.50 a day or a week or something, and you get water for a family. And I'm thinking there's zillionaires out there saying they're philanthropists. Get the people clean water.
Exactly.
Cut disease and illness by massive amounts. So you're talking about it feels like some sort of global world medical tyranny where it doesn't matter whether it was COVID. You mentioned measles and that deadly. I'd rather have COVID than measles. I don't want either of them, of course, but what's the next one? Climate change. Again, based on highly disputable science, the connection between carbon dioxide and global warming is at best debatable. And then you've got wars, you've got protests in Belgium, Holland, Germany, France.
Yep.
About farms. What happened to democracy? Whereby massive amounts of people are telling a democratically elected government, we don't agree.
But listen, the idea of having democracy is just a joke. The joke's on us, right? So now they're talking about Rishi Sunak and how he's not going to win the election, so we need to get someone else in, Kemi or whatever. So, you know, he wasn't elected by the public. Who was in there before him? What was the name of that lady? She wasn't there for very long, 30 days. Who was there before her? Boris Johnson. I mean, they just keep rotating around and around. You know, no one's electing these people. And you know, it's just a farce, one layer of farce on top of another. The big farce, the big farce is that we don't have political choice. We don't have parties. We have a uniparty system. The other farce is they don't represent us. They represent these global predator class. And then, you know, we're given this impression that we have choice and we have elections. No, we don't. No, WEF stooges, they all subscribe to climate change, carbon net zero, you name it, the trans agenda, everything else, the hypersexualization of our children. This is all the all of them on the major policies, they all agree the same things. What do they actually differ? The color scheme of their parties? I mean, that's all it's come down to now. Sorry.
Well, you're right. It appears to me that he who pays the piper calls the tune. And there's some very wealthy people who are in and out of Downing Street. What are they doing in and out of Downing Street? Why are they hosted? The WEF is an unofficial body of private financiers being treated like a state organisation with diplomatic immunity. They hate Bill going through the Irish Parliament, and I mean the Southern Irish, the Republic of Irish Parliament, which is all around us here, will make conversations like these unlawful. And will it make it unlawful, as I understand it, for you to have books on this issue? So some of the books you may have bought that I've bought to support people, I mean, that feels like the former Soviet Union. Whereby it's unlawful to have a book by Claire Craig or Laura Dodsworth or Karen Heineken or you or me, you know. It feels like the Soviet Union, and it's very concerning, and you're right. I think I've a lot of my friends, and fortunately there are a lot now, we are shaken by the absence of democratic, accountable politicians.
Oh, yeah.
Who even answer a question?
So let's talk about religious education. So over here is now called PHSC. I can't remember what it stands for. Public something. In England, it's called PHSC.
Well, it's not just so we don't get off on the wrong foot.
Yeah.
It's very much not religious education. It's relationships and sexuality.
Oh.
Education here, that's what the R is.
Oh. Yeah, so, over here it's called personal, social, health, and economic education, and I think they teach zero.
Here too,
and they don't teach any economics. I can tell you that right now. They don't teach us anything about fiat system and how to be financially prudent and look out. Of course, they don't tell you any of that. It's all indoctrination. But what's happening out there in Ireland then with this, relationship and sexual education?
Just to say to you, the whole concept of the World Health Organization, a child is regarded as being a sexual being from the beginning.
Oh, now, my God.
If that statement, Section 5, if that statement doesn't alarm you, and then they follow up with sexuality begins at birth, and then their curriculum, which I may refer to, you may ask me about it, which I have here in front of me. What they're proposing and what we opposed here, successfully for the moment, and I'll answer your question shortly, for primary school children, indeed for many secondary school children, but for primary school children in particular, I can't imagine why adults, males, would sit down and talk about, for 69-year-olds, sexual intercourse, gender orientation, sexual behaviour of young people, body masturbation, self-stimulation and orgasm.
How old?
For a six-year-old. Now, I have a list in here, Amel, and I think the public should know. So there are two major publications that the WHO prepared that were passed down to the United Nations, that were passed down to the UK government, that were passed down to the individual components of it. So that was the train. So if you say, who funds who, international private finance, who funds the WHO? So you have international private financiers. Then they make recommendations for the World Health Organization. That goes to the United Nations.
Yeah.
Then the UK would sign up to it. So listen for a few moments.
Yeah.
Two documents. WHO standards for sexuality in Europe, and another one, International Technical Guidance on Sexuality Education. They're on the web. They're 80 or 90 pages. They're pretty turgid reading. So give a listen to this. 5 to 8-year-olds. Learners should be able to define gender and biological sex and describe how they are different. That's a 5-to-year-old. Reflect how they feel about their biological sex and gender. Identify the critical parts of the internal and external genitals and describe their function. Practice asking and responding to questions about body parts. 5-year-olds, 9 to 12-year-olds, what sexually explicit media, brackets, pornography are? Stimulation. Explain that many boys and girls begin to masturbate during puberty. And for 6 to 9-year-olds, I mentioned sexual intercourse, gender orientation, sexual behavior of young people. And then for 9 to 12-year-olds, gender identity and sexual orientation, including coming out, homosexuality, first sexual experience, pleasure, masturbation and orgasm. Now, these are direct lists. I'm not quoting my version of it. I'm quoting the WHO's version of it. Now, those are direct lists from those two booklets, and they were passed down to the individual states for implementation. And they are there on our curriculum body's website, until there were complaints made, and they're now removed. But many primary schools still use them, and so do the training organisations. Listen to this. This is teacher training. The course tells primary school teachers they should be prepared to challenge attitudes, introduce transgenderism to junior infants, and get children to challenge their own beliefs on issues around gender. It offers advice on social transitioning. It further develops the theme that transgender children find happiness when living in their true selves. And school teachers were advised to change their language and lessons to make them transgender, non-confirming, inclusive. Now, once again, that's a direct lift. Now, if that isn't a rise in gender ideology, asking children to... Now, remember the age of these children. You're asking children who live in it's a challenging world. You're asking children to challenge that which, for the majority of children, the vast majority of children, is a solid thing. I'm a boy, I'm a girl. It pulls away from informing. It is propagandizing and proactive. And our own Department of Education increased the visibility of transgender young people by supporting pupils in gender and sexual organization alliances, and proactive in establishing links with local agencies. Now, for me,
this isn't education. This is indoctrination.
So you have a child, and then I'll stop for a moment. You have a child who will hardly put up their hand and say, "Sir, I don't understand Ohm's law," or "I don't understand whatever science." They're going to come in the morning and say, "I don't know whether I'm a boy or a girl." in a class of 30. So a school classroom is not, in my view, the forum for such delicate conversations at a time when a young person's mind is in confusion, is still developing and hasn't fully formed.
Mm.
The Finnish Health Service, having been one of the leaders, and I'll stop in a moment because there's a load of this stuff, they said, rightly, any move along this towards permanency should wait until adulthood. And our own National Health Service is actually saying the same thing. So what we're doing with it at all, I find my head is shaking, as you can see. Over to you.
Mate, I'm thinking homeschooling might be something I might have to consider. I've had quite a few people say to me how they've been homeschooling their children. A couple of my guests on my podcast and several of my supporters. I'm currently looking into getting someone to talk about homeschooling. I hear you, and this is stuff that I've come across before, and I just can't get my head around it. I just don't understand why they're attacking our children like this. You talked about the school room, classroom not being a place for this. Agreed, just like it's not a place to be vaccinating. You know, you cannot get informed consent for the flu jab in a school classroom when all the kids are being told, come on, line up for your shots. If there's a kid who doesn't want it, they're going to be under tremendous peer pressure. They're a vulnerable group of people. They are very suggestible. You know, you can suggest things to these group of individuals.
Research shows that children are very pleased, in the main, very keen, to please teacher.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's some children aren't, but research shows that's what particularly young children, they want to please teacher. And if teacher is saying things like, get vaccinated, or do this or do that, well, that's heavy pressure, Amal.
Heavy.
Which is what you were saying. Sorry.
No, and then by extension, then when teacher is saying, you know, these things about gender and sexuality, I think you're almost also creating a culture where, you know what, talk to teacher about these things. Don't go home and talk to your parents about this. This is a safe space where you can talk and you don't need to tell your parents. And what does that do? It breaks down the family unit. It breaks down your conservative values. I mean, maybe I'm just getting older, but I just feel like all the teachers nowadays are incredibly young. I don't see the older teacher anymore. I don't know where they've gone. You've just got these young teachers with, you know, dyed hair. And, you know, they're going to have a certain outlook in life, which might be very different from many conservative parents. You know, and, you know, I don't mean right-wing parents. I'm not talking about fascist parents. I mean parents who just want nice conservative values, family unit, man and wife, you know, stuff like that, and not talk about masturbation or sex with kids who haven't even gone through puberty. You know, it's just that, you know, I'd rather talk to them about things that are more relevant and important in life. And I feel like our schooling system is failing us, and it has been for many years, because instead of teaching you how to be healthy, teaching you how to make money and look after it, how to be financially prudent and stay out of debt, how to be, you know, useful skills that you can take from school and then, you know, use them in life, you don't get any of that. You don't get any of that. But they want to talk about masturbation. I mean, what the hell, man?
Some of us would fail. Some of us fail. We are having difficulty teaching children how to read and write. They're falling backwards in reading and writing, actually, according to Ofsted, that's the inspector, right? Okay.
Mm.
And according to experience.
Mm.
We need to spend money, effort and time and expertise improving what you and I think, understand by education. Yet we're diverting resources, time, capacity and skills into teaching something which is either for many a religious issue, for others a moral issue. You don't need to be a conservative parent to have morals. You can, or a religious parent. And actually it's a home issue. But as you read out, now I only read out part of those 80 to 90 pages. I'm sitting here thinking, what is the World Health Organization doing preparing? These are teaching plans, learning objectives, and what the learner should know. They're actually typical of how a teacher would write, used to write anyway, lesson notes. And I'm thinking, why are they doing that? And then handing it down. Because what then happens? The ordinary person, when asked to write a policy, who would you look for? Where would you find the policy? The policy would be the World Health Organization. So you would learn and say, that's what they say. So cut and paste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's not even, I'll say one further thing. Because we didn't have or don't have a devolved government, the Secretary of State was telling us what to do.
Mm.
So it was direct rule, as you know. Now, what has happened is that they were quoting what appeared to be the science. Now, the original science was that unhappy children are unhappy because they're in the wrong body.
Mm.
And therefore, a protocol was adopted called the Dutch Protocol. And it was partly set up by Dr. Kaltiali, a Finnish woman, following what she took to be research, that the research showed that, yes, just like I quoted there, that the children were unhappy because they were in the wrong body. And if you help them medically or surgically transition, they'll be happy. Now, so what then happened was the Scandinavian countries, America and the UK and probably other European countries, okay, we've got it. We will follow this Dutch protocol. And that, so based on that, we started along a road. Now, those countries that are first in are moving out of it. Finland has now decided, looked into it, the research was flawed.
Yep.
It was biased. Dr. Kaltiali, who set up the clinic, has now totally reversed her position. She has researched it and found it's harmful. It doesn't work anyway. So Finland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and I have the research in front of me, they've reversed. Now, because we were slower in, and Northern Ireland be even slowest, because we were slower in, we're being slowest out. So the National Health Service, I quote, National Health Service guidelines were redrafted to remind doctors that children may simply be going through a transient phase when they want to change sex. The guidelines recommended, that's now, a clinical management approach to explore all developmental appropriate options for children. The same report goes on to say better information was needed about outcomes. I should say, before I cut off your sexual parts, better information is needed about outcomes due to gaps in an evidence base. That's the NHS commissioned report. That should be the end of the matter. And then there is research from Sweden and from here showing statistically it doesn't work. Now, if the Secretary of State stands up in Parliament, and I'll just finish this one, stands up in Parliament and says it's an evidence-based report, scientific evidence, does he not read his own NHS guidelines? Which say, no, you got that wrong, Secretary of State, so let's stop it. So I'll pass back to you, Amadi.
No, I was going to say, I just don't get how we're in 2024 and we talk so much bullshit and generate so much bullshit to justify bullshit. I'm really simple. It's common sense. Don't fracking educate little kids about sex and masturbation. Don't confuse their little tiny heads and start introducing stupid fracking concepts like you might be in the wrong body and you might need medicines and drugs to be happy with really who you are. These are just fracking stupid, stupid ideas. And you don't need a scientific paper and clever words and documents and look how smart I am and how good I am with my English to justify a statement, position or whatever. It's just fracking stupid. I don't need the bullshit there in the first place. And we've lost common sense and we're now in a world where all the idiots, all the people who were in the asylum are now running the asylum. And people like me, dads like me, mums out there are just scratching their head and thinking, how's it got to this point? Why are we even talking about this bullshit? It's absolute nonsense. Who are these idiots creating this? Now, it's either extreme incompetence or it's very nefarious or it's a combination of both. You've got very bad people who are pedophiles and who want to harm our generation, our future generation, to make them compliant, controllable, subservient, you know, because once you go down this route, you're permanent patients, you're forever patients, right? You're never going to have normal sexual function. You're never going to be normal. You'll always be reliant on the state. You'll always be dependent on the state. You'll always look to the state for salvation. Guess what? Governments love that. The big, evil, self-serving, bloated, parasite class loves that. They, just like the communist era, what did the communists say? If you look at the Communist Manifesto, one of the 10 points is, you know, destroy the family unit. So it serves these Marxist, socialist, communist sociopaths to destroy the family unit. And I think there's just certain people who have just ideologically fallen for it. Now, listening, what do you think about the fact that I got reported to the GMC by my medical director for apparently being transphobic? Because on the basis of 5 anonymous trolling, you know, activist accounts and anonymous onto Twitter, my medical director, without any local resolution, without any meeting or anything, referred me directly to my licensing board for investigation. Purely because I do not buy into the transgender ideology. I am not scared of trans people. This is the state of play that we're in now. So what's that medical director thinking in her head? Does she genuinely think I'm an evil, dangerous doctor? I mean, are these people all just ideologically blind now? Have they all fallen for it, hook, line, and sinker?
You may need to re-ask me that question, but because I'll answer the first part of your statement to begin with. But you're quite right. Why are we talking about this at all? Why have I spent time reading 89 pages of one document, 95 pages of another document? Like, I'd rather watch paint dry. Surely there's something better I could be doing, like painting. Now, you can express it. And so you should, if you like, as a person, as an opinion. But if I'm to try to overturn decisions, I've got to try to present the scientific evidence to persuade people. Because we are not at point A where we're discussing whether to introduce it and then saying no. It's there. It's in Scotland and Wales. There are people in England. There are people speaking out against it. That battle has been. That's the new normal, if you like. What people like me are trying to do is get it thrown out again, and that's a lot harder. And you have to do that by reading the science and finding the evidence and presenting a reasonably cogent argument for. A research-based argument for removing it. Now, for me, it should have been research-based evidence to put it in, not research evidence to put it out. It was the same, if you're going to all those other things. So
I'm not criticizing you. I think you're doing a great job.
If you want to add your rights.
No, I'm saying I think you just misunderstood what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is this whole agenda It's just so nonsensical. I don't even understand how it's got in there. It's like saying the sky's orange. And now people are like trying to justify, you people like you are like, no, actually, it's definitely blue. And they're like, well, actually, if you look carefully, it's a heavy tinge of orange with a little bit of blue in it and indigo. And we're just like, how do we get to this point? The sky is blue. Why are we even talking about orange? Like, it's just nonsensical that it's just accepted. I'm just saying it's just the asylum, the asylum people in the asylum are now running the asylum. The lunatics are in charge. And I just feel we've just lost the plot. I think, you know, people like you are doing a great service fighting back against the system. But the problem is we're dealing with the lunatics. And are these lunatics going to listen to people like you and me? Because being lunatics...
I'll try to answer that one.
Okay.
Where you have some form of local democracy, and we're going to tell 74% of the people in Northern Ireland voted against this. Okay. Secretary of State introduced it into law. 74% after a furore, the consultation which they were supposed to have was actually started and finished all of it in a very short time. But 74% of the people who replied still said no. Now, we're going to see, I'm personally going to see whether democracy actually works. Mm. Because 74% of the people said no, and the Secretary of State says yes, and the UK government says yes, and the United Nations says yes. So I'm probably going to be in a position sometime where I'm going to say, does it work at all? Because as you know from one of my positions, I will have some sort of input. Now, will that input be sufficient? That is one where you can say, time will tell. Mm. Because I don't write the documents. Somebody else does that. Now, you then ask me a related one about the rescinding of your medical license because you dare to have a point of view. You see, that takes us back to the start, Anna, doesn't it? Your view does not align with government viewpoint. So whether it was COVID or lockdowns or all that stuff, I was fortunate enough I was retired. Now, on the issue of free speech, it happens that the first outside the mainland meeting of the Free Speech Union was held in Belfast.
I've given up on them.
2 days ago.
I've given up on them. I gave up my membership.
So, yes, just let me... It didn't go all that well. However, the one thing that did come out of it was the position that you find yourselves in, self in. The right of somebody to contest it freely. So, your bosses are saying this, you contested it, but you had no right. Not only did they tell you not to do it, they banned you. You were silenced. As I was on LinkedIn, I was taken off the BBC, you know that, for daring to say that masks are harmful. Well, of course they're harmful, but didn't suit. I was taken off the LinkedIn, I can't get back on, because I dared ask, I dared say, if you're going to inject my grandson or my child, which you did do, would you mind telling me why and what's in it and what long-term stuff? That's a perfectly legitimate question to ask of any medical professional. And I expect, well, I don't know if I expected, but I thought our health minister or our chief medical officer, both of whom were asked, would have had an answer.
Mm.
And you're in the same place. You're in a place where these people have banned you for contesting, for having an opinion, which I thought was the whole idea of a liberal democracy. I mightn't agree with what you say, but you're allowed to say it. And, well, I guess I'm going to find out, aren't I? Because there are a group of us saying it. There are groups of parents out there. And because of the nature of Northern Ireland, our local politicians are local. So... it is a question of watching this space because there are a group of parents. And that brings me to your rights. And I think it's very important, Amman. Parents, having rights are no good if A, parents don't know what they are and they don't enforce them. It is beholding upon all parents to find out exactly how their school is managed, who's on the board of governors, and how did they get there, and what rights you have. Now, in Northern Ireland, I am quite clear. It's what that master's was about. What are the rights of the parents? Now, here, you have a right to be on the board of governors, four of you, by election. You have a right to see the curriculum. You have a right to withdraw your child from specified lessons without giving a reason. And to do that, you've got to know what's on them. So it is harder in Northern Ireland to separate the parent from the school because of the Education Reform Order 1989. In England, some of the larger trusts have started to remove parents from the management and therefore disempower parents. But it goes back to parents have to bother to find out what are your rights, how is your school run? And the school has to tell you, actually. It has to supply you with a list of the Board of Governors and a list of how they got there. So in Northern Ireland, you have, depending on the size of the school, mine had four parent reps, four church representatives, that's because of our history, two teacher representatives, and a couple of education board representatives who were usually local. And because of the way our teachers are appointed, those people have influences on the appointees. And because of the influence of the churches, you expect a modicum of Christianity in our case. And you hope for more than a modicum. So if they stand on their value systems and on their rights, which the Secretary of State reiterated in Westminster, and it's enhanced because I looked it up. There's another paint drying episode for you. But he said it to our politicians, actually. The rights are quite clear. But schools are awkward, or some of them are. But parents have to, if the parents believe, they have to do what you said there. No. You're not doing it. And if you're not going to stand up now, I'm talking to the general parents, you know, if you're not going to do it over this issue, when? If not now, when? End of, I'm off my soapbox.
No, I think that's a really good place to end now. I think, because not everyone, for the idea of homeschooling isn't really an option, because it just isn't. It might be something they would love to do or aspire to do, but they just simply can't because of their circumstances. So I think the next option is, like you said, to get involved with the school and get involved with the board and the board of governors and the parent teachers association or whatever it is, and figure out what's happening in the schools, make sure it's being run properly, and know what your children are being taught. I think that's really, really good advice. And to be honest, I start myself as well. Start making some emails, start getting a bit more involved. It's just sad that it's got to this point, you know, where when I was growing up as a child, you know, school was a safe sanctuary. You just felt teachers were out there to take care of you, were places of learning. I remember my parents saying to me, think of your teachers like your third parent, you know, respect them, listen to them. Now, I mean, I don't think I would give that advice to my kids. My advice to my kids would be question everything. Just because it's coming from your teacher doesn't mean that you have to believe in it. You know, question everything you're being taught.
Yes, I think you asked me before, what advice would I give to my own children? And you're quite right. That advice remains question everything. I do have to say, and this is a personal experience, the vast majority of teachers, now here, Northern Ireland is a conservative place. It's a small C conservative place, but it is. And it's probably better for it, in my view. But no matter what you are, you're still entitled to be conservative. It's not a criticism. If you're conservative, in a democracy, you're entitled to be. But my experience, I can only speak, the vast majority of teachers that I came across had the best interests of the children at heart and went the extra mile and did lots of things with the best intentions, including myself. Maybe it went wrong sometimes, but they were people of integrity and commitment to the children. Now, I can't speak for English schools or other schools or what have you. I can only speak for those teachers who I was in direct contact with, and I had a respect for them.
But Hugh,
that's all I can say.
Hugh. The thing is, these mind viruses, these ideologies, the way they spread and mutate, is because they trick people into thinking they're doing the right thing. Do you think most doctors or nurses are evil, and they're willingly jabbing people with experimental toxic substances, knowing they're toxic substances? Of course not. Most doctors and nurses are really good people. And they think they're doing the right thing. They believe the government, they believe the state, they believe the WHO, and they think by falling out on their actions that they're themselves good citizens and good doctors and nurses. And the same kind of thing applies to the teachers. So most teachers are really nice. And you know what? But the guidance is coming from above. The guidance is coming from the state, which is getting it from the WHO and corporations. And they're being told, follow these guidelines and, you know, and do this. And they think, okay, well, the government's telling us to do this and we do this, we'll be good teachers. And so they act out on those orders. Remember, most evil is done by people thinking that they're doing something right. They're doing something for the greater good. Most evil is committed by good people, not bad people. So I don't question for a second, you know, the teachers or, like I said, the doctors and nurses.
I think it's slightly different with regards RSE, because our circular, this one, still leaves the how and the when in the hands of the school, and it still enables the school to attach values to it. The original stuff, there were no values. It was scientific fact. So I get your general point, Ahmed. We could debate that another time. What I'm saying here is, here the teacher has a right to say, I'm not teaching it.
Is that the same in England?
Pardon?
Is that the same in England?
I can't speak for England. We have the right to do the how and the when. So how, that's a big statement. And remember, the ethos of the school here remains paramount. So there remains a lot of power within our board, Northern Ireland's Board of Governors. Now, there are three bodies fighting it in England, Scotland and Wales. We remain in a different position. However, we are still having to contest it. We are still having to ensure that parents, and I'm involved in this, parents understand their rights.
Mm.
Once they understand them, they've got to use them. And the same applies to Board of Governors. The Boards of Governors have to remind themselves of their actual legal duties and their responsibilities and their power. And I think, as I said before, it is incumbent upon all parents, sounds a bit like a teacher here, incumbent upon all parents to establish how their school is governed, who those governors are, and what the power of those governors is, and find out what the curriculum is, and don't stop until you do.
Yeah.
And what can I say?
No, it's great. Definitely. I think that's it. I think that's the story. That's the summary. Everybody with kids in school, get involved. Don't take anything for granted. Do your research and question everything. Oh, like everything in life. All right, Hugh. Listen, thank you so much, my friend. I'll try and find someone from one of those bodies fighting the fight in England. And I'm sure there's a similar battle going on across the world. Sure, it's the same problem in the States and Canada and Australia and New Zealand. It seems to be whatever problem is happening, it's a global problem now, particularly, you know, in these five eyes countries, you know, these Anglo-speaking countries. It's an attack on our culture, education, everything. Anyway.
Tim Mitchell and Stuart in Wales and Stuart Whitten in Scotland, and I will text or email you their contact details.
Yeah, please. That'd be great. If you put it all in an email, that'd be wonderful. All right. Thank you so much, Hugh. I really appreciate it once again. God bless you.